How can we make the world better? By making ourselves better. The Dr. Joe Show explores how you can make positive personal change by using his groundbreaking and highly effective I Am approach to understand who we are and why we do what we do. Your small changes can have big effects.
Join us now for the Dr. Joe Show with Mark Stiles of Stiles Law and your host, Dr. Joe Schrand.
Stretch the kindness, brush with madness. Is it sadness or just a show? Then go, 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 go. Then go, 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 go. Then go, 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 go.
Let's go to the Dr. Joe Show.
I so appreciate the creative process in you, Mark. Everyone has been different now for, what, months and months and months.
Yeah. It's Let's okay. go. Willow's the Van Gogh. Yeah. Go, 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 go. Let's go.
Yeah, and a completely
the Dr.
spontaneous.
Dr. Joe Show.
Completely spontaneous. I can
Maybe
see
that's
that.
The one.
Maybe, yeah. Let's go.
You know what else we're doing for fun?
What?
So you know how I do the Feel Good Friday segment on Fridays with Rob Hakala.
Absolutely. And actually, I have a story to tell you about that.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yep.
Well, we came up with an idea, a little fun thing to do. We're putting on a contest for the Stiles Law jingle.
Oh.
We're putting on a contest for jingles. Remember jingles, right?
Yep.
What's your favorite jingle? I want my baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back. I want my baby back, baby back. That's
wow.
a good one.
That's a good one. Yeah. I think people will flock to that, to call in their jingles.
So someone already did. So we introduced it. We introduced the concept last week, and somebody found my Facebook page and sent it through Messenger, which I love that. I love it. First in. I mean, you got to put a little extra weight on first in.
Right.
And tomorrow we announce it's a 10 to 30 second ask. The Stiles Law name, the phone number, and a little bit about us. And let's go, right? Upload it to our social media channels, whether it's Instagram or Facebook, either Stiles Law or myself, or email at mark@stiles-law.com. A jingle, Stiles Law. So creatives out there, artists out there, musicians out there, we're putting up a bounty for this too.
Really?
Yes.
What's the bounty? Is it a surprise or do we?
$1,500.
What?
Yeah.
$1,500?
To the winner.
To the winner of the best jingle?
Yeah. We're hoping that entries will be in by the deadline, which is another cool date, 4/24/24.
Nice. Very
yeah.
nice. Oh, yeah.
So due by 4/24/24, and we'll play the top three. At Feel Good Friday. And then the winner will be announced at Shred Show.
Oh, when is Shred Show? It's such a great thing.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
It is May the 4th be with you.
Okay.
So it's May the 4th. So I'm talking with Rob and some other friends about the Star Wars franchise. And I think we found a character that I will be able to play.
Oh, yes?
It's one I'm not fully aware of, but I ordered a cone head. And yeah, we're doing it. So at 12 o'clock noon, the end of Shred Show, we're going to announce the winner of the jingle competition.
That's great.
Stiles Law.
That's great.
And I'll sing it on Feel Good Friday.
Wow.
Why not?
Absolutely. It's a great
fun.
And fun. Absolutely.
So fun. Because jingles are great.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Break off a piece of that Kit Kat bar.
Right. And so,
what would you do for a Klondike bar? Right?
You are just.
Well, I had to look them up.
Oh, I see.
I looked up best jingles of all time.
Wealth of jingles.
So I'm thinking.
And there are no bells attached to this.
Nope.
Right? No.
Nope.
Jingle.
No
bells.
No. Nope. But I'm wondering if some of the Schrands will hit the piano and maybe give it a go. I mean, we do credit your daughter for composing the opening
that
to Feel Good Friday and the podcast.
That's true. Yeah.
It's a cool riff.
And my other daughter for the opening to the Dr. Joe Show.
That's
her voice. That's Sophie's
right.
voice.
So let's go. I mean, $1,500. That's, that's.
I'm going to let them know.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll be announcing that tomorrow on Feel Good Friday.
That's great.
And I guess we just announced it here on the Dr. Joe
Absolutely.
Show, which is great because we want to let everybody know, get in there and dig in and let's have some fun.
I think that's great.
I can't wait to hear the submissions.
How are you going to choose, though? What's the selection process?
So I don't know. You know, we're kind of winging it. This marketing person that we're working with, this amazing human being, is helping us get outside our comfort zone, me specifically, pushing beyond what's comfortable. And I'm hoping that we get some level of listenership involvement. Right. So if we have time to play them on Feel Good Friday, get some text in, get an understanding, maybe we'll have to put a committee together. That part is TBD.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to get a tremendous amount of submissions, though. So.
Right.
So I hope it's really hard.
I mean, could you have your audience voting over time?
Probably.
Right.
Probably. I mean, 4/24/24 is when submissions are due. I think that's probably the plan, because then it's May the 4th. So that's almost 2 weeks.
So
we'll probably do that.
That's great.
Yeah.
May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you. How was your trip?
My trip was remarkable. Los Angeles is, amazing part of the world. But we basically spent a lot of time just hanging out with the kids.
Good.
Which was really nice. We didn't really go traveling anywhere. I hadn't seen, Sophie and Becca in a while.
That's
and good. My son-in-law, Brendan. And I got to meet Becca's new friend, Connor, who just fits right in. So
great.
It was really lovely. It was really lovely. While I was there, however, right before I left, I got this phone call. It was actually an email that led to a phone call with this publishing house out in Albuquerque, New Mexico, called City of Books, CITI of Books. And somehow they had stumbled upon Unleashing the Power of Respect.
Somehow. Somehow they were referred.
Yes.
This amazing book.
Yeah. And they had it vetted by all these different consultants of theirs, including someone from the New York Times, from libraries, from bookstores, and they sent me the reviews. And I got to tell you, Mark, I was sitting there with Carol in Los Angeles, second or third day we were there, reading these reviews. I was getting choked up.
I bet.
I really was.
That's the oxytocin, right?
It was so oxytocin. So the book is going to be featured by City of Books at the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books.
When's that?
April 20th and 21st.
Oh, cool. Are you going to go back out for that?
I was going to go back out there, but the other side here in Massachusetts, Drug Story Theater, is really
cool.
Taking off.
I wanted to ask you about that.
Drug Story Theater is really taking off under the leadership of Kathleen Wright, my COO, Nicole, who's just doing amazing things with these kids. So we're going to be presenting at UMass Lowell.
Awesome.
On the 21st. So
of April.
Of April.
Okay.
We're going to be presenting the 22nd of April. The 22nd of April is a Monday. The 23rd of April, we're presenting for the Mass Nurses Association up in Worcester. And then we're going to be talking about this big thing down at Mass Maritime.
Oh, cool.
On Fentanyl Awareness Day.
Oh, excellent.
And I really, really hope people come. It's going to be free. There's going to be some amazing speakers. If all goes well, Alex Wally will be there also talking about fentanyl and opioid. Remember, Alex Wally was the guy who basically got naltrexone and naloxone to every single person who wanted it.
Got it.
So he's going to come. And we're going to be putting on a show written by Heather, one of our alumni, who is still part of Drugs Free Theater, on Narcan. So I am so proud of them. But again, Mass Maritime, Fentanyl Awareness Day.
What is the new story about for Drug Story Theater? What's the name of the new production?
It's really interesting that you ask, because we don't actually have a name for the new one that we're doing with the Worcester folks. So the kids are creating it, and it's actually written now, and they're in rehearsal for it.
Awesome.
And we asked them to come up with a name for it.
And for the listener who's not certain what Drug Story Theater is, can you share with the listener what Drug Story Theater is and what they're hoping to accomplish with their mission?
Absolutely can. So actually, National Fentanyl Awareness Day is Tuesday, May 7th. So that's when we will be at Mass Maritime, Tuesday, May 7th. Come on down, check it out. So Drug Story Theater, I would love to tell you all about it, and I will tell you about it. But because it's a theater production, we sometimes have to take, breaks in between the acts. And so I think we should actually do that now. We'll take a break in between our acts and take a commercial break with Larry. We'll be right back with the Dr. Joe Show. We'll talk about Drug Story Theater.
Hey, folks. Thank you for listening to the Dr. Joe Show. We've been investigating whether or not we want to bring sponsors into our podcast. What are your thoughts? Do you know somebody who might be a good partner with the Dr. Joe Show, who may want to align their product or service with the Dr. Joe Show? Think about it.
And we're back with the Dr. Joe Show right here in studio, live, not Memorex.
Right, live in studio, which is so much fun. It's so much fun to be back in studio. And I don't know if people realize it, but WATD is doing some remarkable renovation. This place looks beautiful. It looked lovely before, but now it's beautiful.
It's an unbelievable asset. It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah.
There's a whole community around this place. I love it here.
Yeah, it really is a community of creative, caring, compassionate.
Yeah.
And all thanks to, what's that guy's name? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the old troll of rock and roll.
The old troll of rock and
roll. He's listening, I'm sure.
Ed Perry.
He's a weekly listener.
Listen, I just wanted to come back to the jingle idea.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to clarify something, okay? Because I, you know, my psychiatry mind was thinking law stuff. I mean, what about the rights to it? I mean, so these aren't like jingles from old commercials that we might have heard.
No.
You're asking people to create their own image.
Please.
And jingle
for Styles Law. Yeah, that's the goal, is create from scratch a brand new jingle with our name, our phone number, and something about us.
Yeah.
Right? We're going to kind of lead people in Feel Good Friday. You know, what type of problems do we solve? And then it's the name and the phone number, and it's an instrument or not, you know? I can't wait. I mean, we're opening it up to the Plymouth Philharmonic and 10-year-old Johnny with a ukulele. You know, like, bring it all on. Love it.
So content needs to be the name, Styles Law.
Yeah.
The address?
Nope. Phone number.
The phone number.
Yeah. 781-319-1900.
Nice. And then a little bit about what you do.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell folks?
Well, I want people to kind of dig into that. What would be really interesting for me is to not really lead people into that and hear what people understand what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We will tease it out a little bit. You know, we help people. We solve problems. We're proactive. You know, we have proactive legal services, things like that. But I really want to create a blank canvas for people too. You know, this is going to be fun. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah.
But thank you for clarifying. The lawyer in me tends to broad brush sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's funny that you get into the rights of the music. You know, it's funny, everybody, when they're with the lawyer, they lawyer up, you know. I've talked about that with you before.
It's mirror neurons. I mean, I'm just mirroring the legal expertise that you have right in front of me. So, okay, and the deadline is?
4/24/24.
4/24/24. And then it will be announced on?
Shred Show on May the 4th be with you.
May 4th
at our offices. So Shred Show is May 4th, 9 to 12.
Yeah.
And at 12, we're going to be announcing the winner.
That's great.
Yeah.
And Shred Show, folks, I tell you, it is invaluable. It's such a service, completely free. Bring all the documents that you don't want hanging around.
It's not completely free.
Oh, okay.
So the contract is, we're going to provide this ability for you to shred documents and all that, so long as you come and participate with the food drive the food pantry. And what we like to remind people of is, although they love the non-perishable, they also love the checks, because the money has four times the power. So if you were to give them a check, they go into Boston's food bank and they get four times the amount of that dollar. So $1 equals $4. $25 equals $100. Mm. So we ask that people pay that forward. Our community is in need. There are a lot of folks in need. The food pantry is in need. They're doing wonderful. However, as economies start to tighten up and budgets start to tighten up, people, unfortunately, they look to their charitable expenses. Right, they're not really expenses, but they think about their money in and money out, and a lot of the 501c3s, the nonprofits, as you know, it's hard to raise money for your missions, and it gets harder as the economy gets harder, and it's a snowballing effect, because that means those people that are in need are in more need. And so we ask that you come, and you know, with no minimum, it's you know, what you want to give, what you feel is a right to give. And the folks from the food pantry will be there, and they're always fun to chat with and let us know how things are going in our community.
Yeah. So it's better to actually give the $10 than two cans of beans.
Yes.
Right?
A lot better. And it's, you know, I asked them, you know, why they don't shift or reframe the message. And it's one of those, in my mind, that status quo. Well, this is the way we always done it. You know, we give us your non-perishables and we'll put them to good use. And then people are going to the grocery store and they're buying it. However, if they exchange that money instead, then the food pantry would be able to buy four times as much of what they bought at the local grocery store. So, you know, checks, cash, that's what the food pantry really needs so that they can then go to the food bank in Boston and get the discounts on that food so that they can fill up their, you know, in essence, their grocery store, right? The food pantry right. becomes that grocery store for the folks in need.
So you get to shred your documents, but in essence, you're also shredding some of the food poverty that we have here yeah. and the hunger that we have.
And you're participating, yeah. right? So it's really important for us to protect people's, you know, financial information and all of their you know, loan paperwork and all of those things that people want to get shredded, you know, those 1998 Ma Bell phone bills, you know, that people still have. And it's a great time because when we do it right after tax season, because that's when people are really pulling out all of those documents that have their social security number on it and all that. And those are the ones that you want to get shredded. And we bring the truck down and you can actually see them getting shredded.
Wow.
Right? So you're putting it in the machine, you're watching it. So there is no hoping that it worked out. You know, you're watching those documents go away. And you know, in our business, we understand how important those documents are. And then people, they come and they ask, you know, well, what can I shred? You know, what do I need to keep? And those are always fun conversations. We like to have CPAs around if we can, because a lot of the questions do come around tax. And, you know, we're not tax professionals, but, you know, they ask about the real estate. You know, you bought a house in 2002 and you got a package that's, you know, 4 inches thick. Well, guess what? You probably need 2 pages of that, you know, at this point. And, you know, a lot of people are looking at relocating or downsizing, and you know, it's a great opportunity to start that purge.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, nothing wrong with cleaning house. I know that my wife Carol loves it. She begins collecting things the day after the year before, so we'll be there.
So you just keep replacing them. You purge, replace, purge, replace, purge, replace. Or
well, we had a lot to purge. There's a lot.
Oh yeah,
you know, there's so much stuff.
It's overwhelming for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, it's even though they know that it makes sense to be moving, they know that it makes sense to, you know, maybe go to a more of an assisted living opportunity or south or go towards the grandkids. It's the overwhelming thought of getting rid of all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we're going to be moving, but it'd be nice to have a bit more space, you know, because there's a lot of clutter.
Yeah.
Less and less. I'm telling you, it's amazing.
Picking at it.
Yeah.
Really, one room at a time or?
One room at a time and out really digging into the basement. There's so much stuff there from, you know, my mother's apartment.
Isn't it amazing how much we acquire and gather and hold on to? Mm-hmm. We're going to need this someday. Better hold on to that.
Yeah. What do you think that's about? Where does that come from evolutionarily? What do you think?
Scarcity is to a certain degree, but it's also, I mean, it's memories.
Mm-hmm.
You know how this felt.
Mm-hmm.
I want to feel that again, so I'm going to keep it in this box.
Yeah.
But there's a spectrum of all of this, right? Like, you know, the minimalist, you know, kind of makes me uncomfortable too, right? So keeping nothing and keeping only the essentials of what, you know, you need on a daily basis versus the hoarder, right? And then there's everyone kind of lands in between there somewhere. Yeah.
For me, it's the writing. You know, because I've been writing since I was very young and stumbling upon some of the things I was writing in high school. Like, this is where I was, just like you say. And it's not typed, you know, it's all in my scrawly, terrible handwriting.
The memoirs of Dr. Joe.
Yeah. But the stories, you know, the way I was writing, the old crushes and the letters that I never sent. And
you saved them all.
I saved a lot.
And you transferred them from high school to college to after college to where you are now.
Yep.
That's really interesting. What causes you to hold on to that stuff?
Just in case I need it, like in the future, right? Like a sentence or something or a combination of
words. Well, you
know
where to find it.
No, not at all. No.
So what do you do though? Because that would take a lot to say, okay, this box, I know what it is. I'm just going to burn it.
Yeah, I know.
Because I know that I'm not going to go back, but I might.
I might.
I might.
And when? Right. What's cool is I found the original draft of The Warmth, which was a short story that I'd written in college, actually right after college, which was symbolic of the relationship that Carol and I had about wanting to be together, having to have our independence, and then how do you balance those things? And it's a science fiction story. You can actually...
Really?
Yeah, you can actually get it on Amazon now for 99 cents.
The Warmth?
The Warmth.
Oh my goodness, you hear that, people? Let's get that.
Yeah, it's a story that takes place in the future when the world is cold. It's just snow and ice, and everybody is huddled, you know, in their rags, and there's clearly so much tension in the world. And the story opens with this man and a woman who literally had bumped into each other. I mean, literally bumped into each other. And as soon as their bodies touched, through all these rags and, you know, sweaters and everything, as soon as they touched, the gnawing cold that they'd experienced disappeared.
Wow.
And they felt warmth. They felt warmth. And then when they would separate, that gnawing cold would come back in.
I like it.
And they had to make a choice. They could give up their independence, stay connected, and be warm forever, or they could live independently and suffer the cold. I won't tell you what happens.
Wow.
But
was that what won her over once and for all?
I don't know, but we're still together after all these years. The warmth and all. And what's lovely is I get so much warmth, not just from Cal, but just being here with you, Mark, as well, being here at WATD, having our listeners, and of course, the warmth from our sponsors. So with that in mind, let's hear that warmth. We'll take a commercial break. We'll be right back with the Dr. Joe Show.
Hey, folks, welcome back. So any thoughts? Do you listen to other podcasts? Do you see how they do the sponsors? Is there a way that they're utilizing sponsors that you enjoy or you don't enjoy? I listen to SmartList, and I really enjoy how the co-hosts share the voiceover for the product or service. It's really funny for the most part, but it's unique. It's them really endorsing. Does that work? What do you think?
Larry says we're back, which means we are back with the Dr. Joe Show here live in studio at WATD. Live, not Memorex.
Not Memorex. Live, not pre-recorded. Live right here.
Right here.
It's really quite lovely to be live in studio.
It is. It's been a while. You know, remember every single Thursday we would come in here?
Every Thursday we would come in here and then head over to our local restaurant right across the street and do karaoke. And then COVID hit.
COVID. Boo.
Wow. It's amazing what's changed. And the isolation that people are experiencing, we're also finding that there's been another major shift, at least here in Massachusetts. And that's... legalized gambling.
Yes.
Completely changed the whole environment, right? And there's Larry looking at his phone right away.
Putting in a bet.
You know?
It's going to do some serious damage.
Oh, it already has.
It has.
It is.
I can't believe, listen, I mean, call me a Puritan. Saturday, Sunday, pregame, this, that. They're talking about the lines. They're promoting it. They're pushing it. It's like coming from all angles.
Yes, it is. And it's not just betting on who's going to win, who's going to lose.
Yeah, it's betting to bet.
It's betting to bet. It's betting, you know, how many shots will this person do? Yeah. How many free throws will they get? It's this microcosm. It's this tiny, tiny bets, but big bets.
Yeah.
A lot of money. So we're finding that there's a real problem also in adolescence, because the adolescents, we've got the screen time problem, but now it's extended into actually betting on some of the games that they're doing. And there's the difference between...
How are the adolescents betting?
Same
with
way.
With parents' credit cards and such?
Parents' credit cards.
Oh my goodness.
Their money. Yep.
Oh boy.
Yep.
They're saying that 20-somethings are in real danger.
Yep. Yeah. And the thing about the gambling that is so interesting is, unlike drugs and alcohol, which is called operant conditioning, where you get a positive reinforcement each time, which means you want to then do the drug again. or the alcohol again, you get this dopamine rush each time, so you can anticipate it. Because of that, we can treat it more successfully by blocking that receptor site, mm-hmm. blocking where that dopamine is going to go, and so you don't get the same rush. That's not what gambling is. Gambling is called intermittent reinforcement.
Because you might lose.
You might, and more often than not, you do.
They don't tell you that, though.
No. But when you win, you get this explosive
euphoria.
And then you say, well, I can do this again. And there's you know, some excitement in just placing the bet.
Mm.
Are you going to win?
That risk.
Right. And that's the same thing as any other drug or alcohol. There's that little anticipatory trigger of dopamine where you get the little bit of dopamine and then you make a plan to get the rest of it. But in gambling, that plan doesn't always succeed. And that's why it's so difficult to treat.
So what do you mean with the drug? So the thought of doing the drug will trigger a mini dopamine and then doing the drug will get it.
That's right.
And in gambling, placing the bet gets that initial, and then winning is the euphoria.
Right.
Losing is disastrous.
Right. But you see, with the drug, I mean, until you develop a tolerance, you're going to get the same, basically the same high each time you drink that beer or smoke that joint or, you know, do that other drug.
Mm-hmm.
So you can anticipate it. With the dopamine, we get this little blip of dopamine from the limbic system, and then the dopamine looks like it falls below the baseline of, because we have some dopamine in us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very ancient chemical involved in fine motor control, mm-hmm. sorts of different things. But you see, there's a couple of charts where it shows that the dopamine level dips below the baseline of where it was. And I have a hypothesis about that. I think that's the limbic system beginning to take control of the prefrontal cortex.
Really?
And the planning part of the brain. Because in order to get the drug, you have to make a plan. It doesn't just appear. You have to make a plan. And what I talk with folks who are struggling with substance use is that actually is helpful because it means there will always be a moment where you can make a different plan.
Right.
You just have to anticipate what will happen next if I do this drug now. With gambling, same sort of mechanism, but well, what will happen next?
Not sure. So that makes it harder to work through.
And what are you really expending? I mean, no question that both any addiction involves relationships, and that is really the price you pay.
Right.
Is for that relationship. But with gambling, it's the money, credit, mortgages, and that then affects relationships. And then we have this increased incidence of depression and suicidality, and sometimes aggression and crime, and this sense of anxiety and hopelessness. How do I deal with that? Maybe this time I'll win.
Right.
And we've legalized it in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
You know, we've legalized it. So just because it's legal doesn't mean it's safe.
Clearly not.
We talk this all the time. But now at Riverside Community Care, you know, where I'm chief medical officer, our president, Victor Gabbio, has said, let's take a look at this. So we are actively exploring how we can not only identify, we have all these things to identify gambling. Only 4% of people who have a gambling problem know they have a gambling problem.
Really?
Yeah. They just don't, it's just say until it's too late. You know, isn't that amazing? Because
what is the percentage of, you know, alcoholics who know they have an alcohol problem?
Excellent question. And that's absolutely one of the questions is, you know, do you know you have a problem?
Right. No, I just like having 12 beers every night.
Right. But I think because we have more education in our history around substance use and drugs and alcohol, I think more people are willing to take a look. Maybe I do. We're just beginning this with gambling. So I don't think that we've got enough of the foundation.
So the person who stops by the casino four nights a week and plays however many hands, and it's fun. It's something I enjoy doing, and it's not a problem.
Right.
Somebody who goes to the bar and plays keno until they run out of money, it's not a problem.
Right.
I enjoy it. It's a hobby.
Yeah. But we now have online gambling.
Right.
Where you don't have to go anywhere. Where you get to tell the program, the computer program, how much money they can take out of your bank account.
Right. And they'll take it all.
And they'll take that money out.
Yeah.
And then in Massachusetts, with the legalized gambling, there are these fail-safes, these things that are sort of blocked. So you can't always just take more money out of your bank account, which is good. You can't necessarily change
it. What do you mean?
There are these blocks. You know, you say how much
are
money
they self-regulated?
In Massachusetts, they can be regulated by
really?
by the state, right? And there's another one where you can't continue gambling. You have to take a break.
Really?
Yeah. So
online.
And these are online gambling, yeah, right? And these are the licensed gambling.
Yeah.
I think it was like $3.5 billion in the first year.
Wow.
And the Massachusetts get like $200 million of that in taxes, right? Because the gambling,
yeah,
casinos. But the non-licensed gambling is still there, and that's all offshore, and there are no regulations on that.
And that's still online.
That's still online, and people can tap into that. And if you're not aware that it's an offshore gambling facility and not aware that there aren't these fail-safes, you may not get the money that you win.
Right.
You know, there's no block on it. In casinos and also the online stuff, there's also this other really interesting psychological twist that they've done, which is no matter what you win, there are all the bells and whistles.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But you may have won less than you bet.
Right.
And so you still think, you still get that like rush. I'm ahead. No, you may not.
You're losing,
yeah,
all of your money.
Yeah. So it's really interesting.
And so what's Riverside going to do? Are they putting together a treatment program?
We're just deciding what we're going to, yeah, do right now. We're had one of our first meetings today. I've done a lot of research through the literature on this. Started to write up something to explain a little bit about the whole pleasure principle, mm, for somebody who's not, you know, in the field. Talk about mangoes, right? Like millions and millions of years ago, you saw a mango tree and you ate a mango. You go, whoa, this is really good. I want to remember this.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same mechanism. I want to remember that mango tree so the next time I'm hungry, I may be able to find a mango tree. That's the same mechanism that drugs and alcohol use. But the chances are when you go to the mango tree, unless you're there in the right season, it's not going to be in bloom. So you train yourself when to go. You're not going to have the same response as in gambling, where you just go to the mango tree every 3 weeks hoping to find a mango.
Right. The best mango.
The best mango. It's sort of interesting.
It's very interesting. Well, it's nice to know that you're out in front of that and going to help people before they even realize they need help.
Yeah.
Because I'm hearing, you know, the forecasts of what could be, and it's not pretty. Yeah. You know, these kids, you know, they're starting in high school and college, and all of a sudden, you know, their credit's trash. So by the time, you know, they're in their late 20s,
right,
they've, you know, either beat up their credit or emptied their potential savings.
Right. Yeah. No, it's so important to
get. And it's glorified.
And it's completely glorified. And then you win.
Right.
And you think,
oh, I can do this every time. I'm better.
I mean, I succumb to that. I play Keno. I do scratch tickets. But I know that, you know, I have a limit. I'm not going to spend my rent money.
Right.
Or my food money. You know, I've got a little bit of money I can spend. I have a bank account. Anything I win goes back in. There is an entertainment. It's one of the few things that I do that sort of.
So are you
silly.
Part of the 4%?
I hope not. Could be. It's,
actually, you'd be the 4% that knew. So that are you knew. Part of that 96%? Right?
Yeah, right. But it's
by
really,
someone's definition, maybe.
It's interesting. So I'm working on a strategy of how to address it, because the literature says that none of the medicines that we use to block the dopamine receptors for opioid use, alcohol use, other substance use, that doesn't work. Cognitive behavioral therapy may not work. Other things may not work. So I'm thinking of doing harm reduction model, where you are given money by the state to gamble. You may lose the money, but any money that you win goes back into the state to help other people with gambling. It's very similar to drug-free theater. Contribute to society to help with your sobriety. You know, will it work? I don't know. Just an idea.
Say that again. So
you're given, it's like the place where we now have place where you get a clean needle to do your heroin. So
right.
You're not going to get, you know,
Hep C
or other disease. That's a harm reduction model.
Got it.
We're not getting rid of all the harm, but we're reducing it. What if we applied a similar concept to gambling, where we said to somebody, we can't stop you from gambling, but anything you win, you get to give to other people to help them with their gambling addiction. That's where you can contribute to society, help with your sobriety. What's nice is we have our own people contributing on a regular basis to the Dr. Joe Show. Our sponsors has nothing to do with addiction, but our sponsors have so much they're contributing. Let's take a commercial break. We'll hear from them. We'll be right back with the Dr. Joe Show.
Hey, welcome back. And again, we're super grateful for you listening to the Dr. Joe Show. If you have anyone that you think might be a good sponsor, shoot us an email, at drjoepodcast@gmail.com. drjoepodcast@gmail.com. Give us your thoughts about the show, too. We're wondering, are we talking to the trees or are people really gaining value in this? Please let us know. Thank you again and enjoy the rest of the show.
And we are back with the Dr. Joe Show right here in studio, right here across the table.
Yeah.
Lie back, folks, and enjoy the rest of the show, the Dr. Joe Show.
Yeah. Good discussion.
I mean,
we were just sort of riffing around here, you know, taking a gamble on what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't resist that.
Yeah.
It's such a card.
All right. Yes. Indeed. So let's talk about Drug Story Theater for a little bit. So what's happening? What are we doing? What is it for? What is the mission? Let's talk about it. Okay.
So the elevator pitch, Drug Story Theater, we take teenagers in the early stages of recovery from drugs and alcohol. We teach them improvisational theater, and then we use something called psychodrama, and they create their own scripted shows about the seduction of, addiction to, and recovery from drugs and alcohol. They then perform those shows for middle schools and high schools, so the treatment of one becomes a prevention of many. That's our slogan. The treatment of one becomes a prevention of many. But in between each scene of the show, the kids step out of character, and they do PowerPoint presentations teaching the audience about the neuroscience of adolescent brain development and why their brain is at such risk for addiction. All the kids in the audience take a pre-show and then a post-show neuroscience quiz, and we measure how kids who learn about their brain change their perception about using drugs and alcohol. We're not telling people don't do drugs. It would be nice if they didn't, but what we are asking them to do is just wait. Wait until your brain is a bit more developed so that you're not at such risk. We have numbers that are well researched. If you start using drugs or alcohol after the age of 21, 1 out of 25 people are at risk for lifelong addiction. And that's part of the PowerPoint. So we put that number up on the screen and kids go, oh, you know, and it's scripted, you know, wow, 1 in 25, what's that about? And then they say, but if you start using the drugs before the age of 18, that number goes from 1 in 25 to 1 in, and we put a slide up, guess here. And, you know, we may have 600, 700, 800 kids in the audience, and they all start shouting out numbers. Now, I know that you know the number, but what do you think it is? 1 in 25 after the age of 21, 1 in what before the age of 18?
So I do know the answer.
Yep.
Do you want me to give you the answer?
Yes.
1 in 4.
1 in 4.
Ladies and gentlemen, 1 in 4.
1 in 4.
So the theory is wait.
Yeah, wait till your brain's developed.
So it's not Nancy Reagan, just say no. It's not cracking the eggs, this is your brain. It's wait until your brain is developed enough to handle what you're putting it through.
That's right, because addiction is not about morality. It's about mortality. It's simply the way the brain responds. I mean, it's the same response as the mango tree.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, though, your brain, when you are younger, is a limbic, emotional, irrational, impulsive brain where memories also live. It's just part of our brain. You're not thinking about the future when you're doing drugs when you're 15 years old, you know? And that's the trap. And we don't know which 1 in 4 is at risk, and you don't know. So during the show, we present this information.
This is peer-to-peer.
Peer-to-peer. That's right. It's not me. Not some, you know, white-haired old psychiatrist telling you this.
At the chalkboard with a pointer.
It's the kids.
Yeah.
Because they've lived it.
Yeah.
And they all have said if they had only known the brain science before, chances are they would not have used drugs when they were younger. So after the show, there's a talk back, which is even more powerful than the show. So all the kids in the audience get to ask our kids questions up on stage. I moderate it. And at some point, we'll have, let's say, an audience of 800 kids. We'll have 200 kids in the audience stand up, a whole section of the kids. And we'll say, that's how many of you at risk for lifelong addiction, just because the way your brain is. Could be you, could be the person next to you. You don't know. But just the visual of it is so powerful to see a quarter of the kids in the auditorium standing up, representing those at risk.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly powerful. You know, just one of many of the powerful things. But we also now have a show about, so the first show was called Price You Pay, which was about peer pressure.
Mm-hmm.
The second show called Second Chances was really about your own internal sense of insecurity and not being valuable and having depression and anxiety and do I fit in? And I want to feel some pleasure, so I'll use. And then the third show that we created is called We're Still Here. And that's about something called ACEs.
Mm.
ACEs are adverse childhood experiences because sometimes kids go through real trauma. And again, that leaves their brain more vulnerable, in part because of the cortisol response, the stress hormone, blocks dopamine and blocks oxytocin, the neurohormone of trust. Very hard to feel any pleasure when you're under that much stress.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard to trust anyone when you're under that stress. So some people will use drugs and alcohol to at least replenish the dopamine. But what we also know now is that the dopamine itself interferes with oxytocin. That's why we say, you know, you can get high, but the price you pay is trust.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got that show. And now we've got this new show that Heather wrote on Narcan.
Cool.
Called Back to Life, based on one of her experiences where she's over with some friends, they're doing something, and it's laced.
Wow.
Laced with fentanyl. You know? So that's the show that we're going to be performing up in Worcester and then for the Fentanyl Awareness Day. And that we'll have more performances of that, but please come and check that out. And then we've got another show that these kids at Rockdale Recovery High School up in Worcester are creating based on their stories. We don't have a name for it yet, but it's also incredible. It's about, you know, combining the peer pressure and the trauma and all these different things. It's their stories and how they are managing. And they're remarkable kids. You know, we're so honored that these kids are willing to share their stories and they just feel safe with us, and they open up and they talk about what's going on. And then we've got, you know, the psychodrama where one kid becomes a director, the other kids enact the story they just told. Nicole is writing everything down, and she's crafted it into a really wonderful script that the kids are now memorizing, and it's being staged and blocked.
So, I love it.
Really cool.
Wonderful people, Kathleen and Nicole, doing God's work.
Yeah. I'm so honored that they have really taken this, and they're really running with it. You know, I mean, I would love to be able to focus on drugs-free theater, but I'm also, you know, chief medical officer here, medical director there, doing a few things here, host of the Dr. Joe show, you know? So I'm really glad to have a team.
Yeah.
You know?
Put it all out there.
Yep.
Put it all out there.
Yeah.
Help the world, save the world.
Why not?
I love it. I love the drug story theater. I think it's such an amazing concept.
Thank you.
It's impacting people.
It's absolutely.
And you have data too. So
yeah, we got data, absolutely. And we've got kids who've been with us for years who are really doing great.
That's awesome. I mean, it must be so therapeutic for them to be able to share that and see that they're impacting people. And then of course, you know, we've talked about the theater and the oxytocin of being cheered.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, taking that chance, taking that risk, going out there on stage and then being acknowledged and valued. That must be amazing for them.
It is. Instead of being stigmatized and peripheralized and looked down on because you're a drug addict.
Right. Druggy.
And this is your own fault.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had people, even here in Marshfield, say, why should we be paying anything to help these people when they did it to themselves?
Mm.
You know, a somewhat archaic view. We know so much more now.
Right.
You know, you're going to really blame someone for having this condition?
I'll blame the Sacklers.
Yes. Fair enough. Fair enough. But the person who was using that Percocet. But yeah, you're right. We, and as physicians, we have to take some responsibility for that too.
Mm.
We were prescribing silly amounts of this stuff. Silly, silly amounts. When this whole thing was starting, I think was the data from 2012 or 2008, the CDC calculated that enough opioid medicine, like Vicodin, let's say we convert everything to Vicodin, we convert OxyContin, oxytocin, and Percocet and everything.
Not oxytocin.
No, OxyContin, not oxytocin. Good, I'm glad someone's listening. We convert it all to Vicodin.
Yeah.
Enough Vicodin was prescribed in the United States that every
in one year,
that every single person of the 300 plus million people in the United States could have 5 milligrams of Vicodin every 4 hours for 3 weeks.
No.
Mm-hmm. If you took the Vicodin pill, it's actually a capsule that's about 7 millimeters long, and you stacked it end to end, it would reach from here to the moon and back.
Oh, my goodness.
That's how much we prescribed. Just silly. We were really innocent, though. We didn't think that it was addictive.
There are some great documentaries on that. Michael Keaton played one. I think it was called Dope Sick.
Yeah.
And then Netflix had another one called Painkillers.
Yeah.
And it did a really good job explaining how that happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, I hope we learn from that and never let that happen again.
But it's about mortality.
Yeah.
Not morality. Mark, always fun.
This was great.
It's great.
Listener, I hope you enjoyed hanging out with us tonight.
Yeah. Larry, as always, a pleasure. And we'll be back here next week.
We will.
All right. See you then.
Do it for love, or was he just being wild? Who knows? Van Gogh. Stretch the kindness, brush with madness. Is it sadness or just a show, Van Gogh?